So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 11. And we'll be reading from text number 16 through to 20. And we'll chant text number 20 together. Okay, so I'll go through 16 to 19, and then we'll do 20 together. Okay, so I'll just read the translations for the previous verses. This is text number 16. Ramdas, one of the chief branches, was full of fraternal love of Godhead. He made a flute from a stick with 16 knots. Text number 17. Srila Gadadhar Das was always fully absorbed in ecstasy as a gopi. In his house, Lord Nityananda enacted the drama Dankali. Text number 18. Sri Madhava Ghosh was a principal performer of kirtan. While he sang, Nityananda Prabhu danced. Text number 19. When Vasudev Ghosh performed kirtan, describing Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, even wood and stone would melt upon hearing it. Okay, so 20 is on the board. Translation in purple by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There were many extraordinary activities performed by Murari, a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes in his ecstasy he would slap the cheek of a tiger, and sometimes he would play with a venomous snake. Purport. Murari Chaitanya Das was born in the village of Savrindavana, Pura, which is situated about 2 miles from the Galasi station on the Burdwan line. When Murari Chaitanya Das came to Navadweep, he settled in the village of Modadrum, or Morgachi Gram. At that time he became known as Sangha, or Sangha Murari Chaitanya Das. The descendants of his family still reside in Saryapata. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat Antilila, chapter 5, there is the following statement. Murari Chaitanya Das had no material bodily features. For he was completely spiritual. Thus he would sometimes chase after tigers in the jungle and treat them just like cats and dogs. He would slap the cheek of a tiger and take a venomous snake on his lap. He had no fear for his external body, of which he was completely forgetful. He could spend all 24 hours of the day chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or speaking about Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. Sometimes he would remain submerged in water for 2 or 3 days, but he would feel no bodily inconvenience. Thus he behaved almost like stone or wood, but he always used his energy in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. No one can describe his specific characteristics, but it is understood that wherever Murari Chaitanya Das passed, whoever was present would be enlightened in Krishna consciousness simply by the atmosphere he created. Okay. Omegyana Tamarandasya. Yananjana Shilakaya Chakshum Militamina Tasmai Shri Guravena Maha. Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tamvitam Tvam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha kalpaturabhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Okay, so we begin by begging your blessings. We can say something this morning that will be pleasing to the Guru Parampara. It's a very very wonderful time to be here with all of you this time of Kartik, and a very wonderful series of verses and purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This chapter of the Adi Leela, these verses are very wonderful for many significant reasons. Here we are hearing about the associates of Lord Nityananda, and they are being described, their name. We've been given something of their activities, and in this particular purport, Murari Chaitanya Das. We're hearing about where he lived, etc. So this theme, the theme here, is the theme of transcendental personalism. We are being introduced to the eternal family of Lord Chaitanya, his associates, the activities that they perform, and very significantly, they're very, very powerful, very strong, and very consistent loving dealings. Why are we being introduced? We are being introduced to a family that we are ultimately meant to return to. They say the home is where the heart is. So when we hear about these loving associates, so many wonderful and subtle things are taking place. Many wonderful and subtle things that we generally are not conscious of. There is a fire in devotional life. Sometimes it's described as sadaka agni. And that is the fire that builds up within the consciousness. Krishna talks about the fire of devotional, or the fire of transcendental knowledge. By hearing about the loving dealings, we also open our hearts up to the possibility of engaging in the loving devotional service of the Lord and his associates. Recently I was invited to give a talk on resilience training, right? So in the secular world, there's a big thing about how people can become more resilient, because they're considering that nowadays people lack resilience, they lack endurance. So anything goes wrong, they're immediately ready to leave. So it is interesting. In Ayurveda, it's actually explained that when the sadaka agni is high, then people become very resilient. Sadaka agni comes from the devotional practices. There's a fire of devotional practice. When the devotional service is done very deeply, then just like you have the agni in the stomach, which is able to digest the food and remove the toxins from the body, there is also an agni in the consciousness. This is called sadaka agni. And it allows one to digest experiences. It also allows one to digest emotions. So sometimes in your devotional life, there'll be challenges, and you will sometimes even feel negativity or feel down. But if your sadaka agni is high, it is like you're able to digest those experiences, release any negativity, gain whatever lessons will be there from those experiences, and move on a stronger, deeper, devoted person. So how is that Sadaka Agni fanned? Or how is that Sadaka Agni developed? It is developed through deep, loving, devotional exchanges. There are hidden sciences and principles in the Shastra. As we receive the blessings of the spiritual master, of the devotees, then things which are not immediately obvious, they actually start to stand out within the Shastra. Lord Chaitanya's associates are here. They have been spoken about in the different devotional activities. Sri Madhava Ghosh was a principal performer of kirtan. Vasudev Ghosh performed kirtan describing Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And when he described it, even wooden stone would melt upon hearing it. We hear before, Trigadada Das was always fully absorbed in ecstasy as a gopi. Right? Why is Gadada Das fully absorbed in ecstasy as a gopi? Because he is Srimati Radharani, the topmost gopi. We hear about the activities that they perform. We hear about their extraordinary activities. In this purport, Murari Chaitanya Das, right, had no material bodily features, for he was completely spiritual. Thus, he would sometimes chase after tigers in the jungle and treat them just like cats and dogs. He would slap the cheek of a tiger and take a venomous snake on his lap. He had no fear for his external body. This is a clue. He had no fear for his external body. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, it's explained that someone who is perfectly, someone who has perfected ahimsa, someone who has perfected non-violence, that means they don't act violently, they don't speak violently, and they don't even think violently. There's no anger or violent thought, even within their consciousness. In the Yoga Sutras, it's explained that no one can manifest anger in the presence of such a person. Right? Isn't that amazing? Because you have to be able to, you can only manifest something in someone's presence if you can attune into what they are. In other words, if someone has some negativity within their own heart, then they're open to negativity from other people. Right? It's like the law of resonance. What you carry in your own consciousness also affects what other people can manifest around you. So because he was fearless, right? You see, they say, Prabhupada talks about eating, sleeping, mating and defending, right? Sometimes he translates the eating, sleeping, mating and fearing. Because if you have to be so defensive, it means that actually within your consciousness there's what? There is fear. Right? You're defending yourself because you have fear within your consciousness. You're scared. So where there's no fear, there's no need to defend. So because he's free of any sense of fearing, which causes the violence comes from fear. Therefore, no one can manifest aggression in his presence. So when he is dealing with the lion, with the tigers, he's completely fearless. And because he is fearless and has no violence, they cannot respond with any aggression. They can't attack him. Because their aggression can't manifest in his presence. Do you understand what I'm saying? Right? So actually, people are only able to manifest something in our presence because there's something of our consciousness that is attuning to the negativity of that individual. These are very subtle points, but also the opposite is also very powerful. That means if your consciousness is saturated with love, you can disarm anyone. Right? And when I say love, I mean love, not sentiment. Right? It is so important as devotees to understand the spiritual science comprehensively. If you understand things in a superficial way, then your behavior will lack endurance. Okay? Because if you don't understand something properly, you'll do it. You won't see the result immediately, and you'll therefore think that this doesn't work. Let me do something different. Okay? It's just like an uneducated person. They find out from their parents that mummy's pregnant, she's about to have a child. The child, you know, the son is so excited. My mum's about to have another child. This is so amazing. This is so exciting. But there's one problem. That young man doesn't understand that it takes 9 months. He goes to school, tells all his friends, yeah, I found out, you know, I'm going to have a brother or a sister. It's wonderful. He comes home the next day. No, there's no one there. You know? Mommy, what's wrong? You told me that you're going to have another kid, right? I don't see anything. Is this, did you change your mind? You know, what happened? No, son, it takes 9 months, right? It takes 9 months. So there's nothing wrong. It just requires this period of maturation. So when the child has full knowledge, then his excitement and enthusiasm remains because he understands, no, there's nothing wrong. Everything is going according to plan. It just takes 9 months. There is a very powerful devotional science of how to really relate with the devotees with affection and love. But if you don't understand it properly, you will stop being loving towards the devotees. I guarantee you. Right? Because if you don't understand it properly, then you may be kind to the devotees and they may not even reciprocate immediately. You may think, I even tried my best to be kind to this person and look what she did or what he did. You know, this so-called being loving to the Vaishnavas, it's sentimental, it doesn't work. Let me go and do something else. Isn't it? Because you don't actually understand. If you do it and do it properly, you will see something very amazing. We were working on a seminar and we were looking at the statements in the Shastra about child psychology. And, you know, Prabhupada will sometimes quote, Chanakya, right? 0 to 5, you treat the child like a king, right? Then 5 to 15, you give them responsibility. 15 onwards, 16 onwards, you treat them like a friend. And, you know, why? How does that work? So according to the Shastra, according to the Ayurvedic literatures, which ultimately, Ayurveda is ultimately coming from the Lord, 0 to 5, the child's intelligence isn't developed. Right? So if you chastise a child between 0 to 5, they don't have the intelligence to discriminate that they've done something wrong. They will think that there's something intrinsically wrong with them. And therefore, it will damage their self-esteem, it will damage their confidence, and it will break their trust in you as a parent. Right? So, 0 to 5, you can guide them, but you never rebuke the child. When you do that, between 0 to 5, their self-confidence and self-esteem, their sadaka agni, becomes very, very strong. When they become age 5, the intelligence is sufficiently developed that they can discriminate. So from that point, you can start to correct them. And guess what? Because from 0 to 5, you're just constantly giving them love. When they hit 5 and you correct them, they will have the psychology whereby they will see everything you do as an expression of love. Therefore, from the age of 5 onwards, if you've done the right thing between 0 to 5, when they hit 5 and you correct them, they feel, oh, mummy's telling me off. Oh, she's so kind. Right? You see, it's so amazing, isn't it? The Shastra. There's a reason behind everything. Now, how does this relate to our loving dealings? Someone may have done something wrong, but if you consistently show them love, then actually, if you have to share or guide something, you will have imbued so much trust and love that they will also experience your feedback or correction as another expression of love. In other words, affection is effective. You understand the point? By being loving and by being affectionate, it's actually effective. If you understand how it is done properly, if you do it sentimentally, it doesn't work. Because we're not here to encourage the negativity of others. We're not sentimentalists. Right? You know Prabhupada, you know the example, have you heard the example Prabhupada gave of the potter, right? Who has the clay pot in the hand. And so one hand is supporting the pot. You've heard this before. And the other hand is knocking it into shape. Right? So the hand that supports, this is the feminine aspect. This is the motherly love. This is the unconditional love. But let's say you're building a clay pot and you give unconditional love and you just hold and support the clay pot and you don't also knock it into shape. When the clay is very moldable, it can fold in, right? You have a clay pot in your hand, it's very moldable. You just hold it and you don't do any correcting. It can even fold in. In other words, the clay pot becomes spoiled, right? The opening at the top folds in. You can't even use it as a clay pot because you can't get anything in it because you just gave the unconditional love, right? So that's your devotee who no one wants to address things when they need to be improved. You understand? Now you go the other side. You have the clay pot and you just knock it. There's no support. You have something in your hand, no support. You just hit it with the hammer. That's the clay pot that goes flying out of your hand. That's the devotee who leaves the movement because they're treated harshly. You understand? It's too harsh. You just hit it. It just goes flying out of your hand. Right? Or you have the clay pot that's in your hand, you just smash it. Right? So the clay pot breaks. That's the devotee who stays in the movement because they have nowhere else to go. But they're broken. Right? They're broken. They have all this resentment because of how they were treated in Krishna consciousness. Okay? So the science is that there is the unconditional love and there is also the development, the feedback, the improvement. Yeah? And when you understand this science properly, then actually you can understand there is a time for love and there is a time for love in the form of correction. Hmm? You have to know what you can give and when to give it. In other words, there is like a ratio of affection. To the degree that someone feels that you're affectionate, to the degree that someone feels supported, loved and secure in your association, to that degree your feedback will be effective. So if you want to help other people to improve, support them first. Make them feel secure first. You've been intelligent enough to know, okay, are they secure enough to now receive this feedback that will help them develop? Do you understand? There's a science of affection. If you don't know the science, then you will stop being affectionate in the devotional association because you will find that you'll go to extremes. Okay, I tried to be loving to the devotees. They just mistreated me. I have to look after myself now, right? It doesn't work. Yeah. People talk about being loving. I've tried that. It didn't work. It's all about me. I've got to protect myself. Prabhu. Okay? Right? You know you've heard it before, right? Or you go to the other extreme. Someone does anything wrong and, you know, this isn't Krishna consciousness. This isn't what I signed up for. You know, let's pack our bags and leave, you know? It's just one extreme. It's either extreme sentiment or extreme harshness and detachment. No, there's a middle ground. Huh? These are complete sciences in the Shastra. It is so amazing, we just might miss it. Hmm? What else is being spoken of? What other themes are here? You hear about each of these devotees and the devotional activities that they perform. This is real transcendental personalism. We cannot continue to be a movement where we are impersonal. There is no one size fits all. Different devotees are being empowered in different ways for different services. Prabhupada
is extremely intelligent because his intelligence is actually being fed to him in real time, in the moment, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, what you will find is, you'll find this bewildering thing. You'll find that unless you study Prabhupada's statements, he's saying different things to different people about the same thing. And sometimes he's saying that he's answering the same question with different people, and he's saying completely the opposite thing. And you're thinking, how is that? There's a wonderful letter by Prabhupada where he says it's a question of who can catch the big fish without getting wet. So you will see in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada is actually empowering his different followers for different services. And by nature, and by empowerment, and by advancement, different people will be qualified to do different things. Our mistake is that we think Atmavam Manyate Jagat. Everyone sees the world from their own position. We think, I can't do that. That looks a bit dangerous. If he does that, maybe he'll fall down. Why are you thinking that? Because if you did that, you definitely would fall down. And of course, I am the topmost devotee in Krishna consciousness, right? I am Krishna's gift to ISKCON, right? So if I can't do it, no one else can do it, right? If I can't do it, you know, then Radha Maharaj, don't try it, you know, please. You know, it's pretty dangerous, right? You know, something may happen, right? No, it's not like that. Different people are empowered in different ways to do different things. So we have to understand, okay, if I try to do that, it could confuse me. But that doesn't mean that that other person, being more advanced than I am, or being empowered in a particular way, it doesn't mean that they can't do it. So this is a question of personism. It is the adhikar of the individual. You understand? To be personal means you have to look at their qualification. According to their qualification, what are they qualified to do in devotional service? And then you encourage them in doing what they're qualified for. And this is something very, very wonderful. There are hidden sciences. The principle of empowerment is hidden in the teachings. The love that you give pursues you. Do you understand? The love that you give to other devotees pursues you. It comes after you. It seeks you out. And that love that you give other devotees, it strengthens you and empowers you in ways that you cannot possibly imagine. You will find in the future that you will meet certain challenges. And the thing that will surprise you when you meet these challenges is how strong you are, and how in meeting these challenges that you met previously and they disturbed you, that you'll meet the same challenge again and you'll walk through it and you'll think, what happened? I don't understand it. How is it that the same challenge that I struggled with earlier in my devotional life, possibly the same challenge that I've been struggling with for lifetimes, that in this life you just walk through it. It will be the empowerment and the strength and the resilience based upon not sentimental exchange, but a deep, loving empowerment and support that you gave to the other devotees. Your sadhaka agni, your fire of devotional strength, your ability to digest experiences, your ability to digest shastra, your ability to digest the teachings is coming by how you are empowering and encouraging the devotees by your loving exchanges. That is actually where it's coming from. So when you encourage, inspire, and strengthen the devotees, the power and the encouragement and the empowerment that you've given others is coming back to you. So the science of empowerment begins with you. Ultimately, you can bring yourself up in a tremendous way, or you can tear your own strength down. The choice is actually yours. Don't blame anyone else. Don't look towards any other devotee. And please don't talk about the authorities. The authorities didn't do this. The authorities didn't do that. There's one person who is determining your spiritual empowerment. Actually, it is you. Right? You could say, actually, it's the grace of the devotees. That's true. But they become inspired to help someone who wants to be empowered, who's doing the right things. You walk along the path, and then others will see you walking that way, and they'll encourage you to move in that direction faster. In other words, as Prabhupada says in the purport in Bhagavad Gita, God helps those who do what? Who? Help themselves. You understand? Madhuri Kadambini. Krishna gives his mercy to the devotees, right? The effort attracts mercy. So someone is going to encourage you to move forward if they see that you actually want to move forward. Right? Does that make some sense? We have a conviction. We talk about Varnashram, people engaging according to their nature. We have a conviction. I was thinking about this yesterday. Our conviction is that the establishment of Varnashram in our movement, the establishment of Varnashram in the modern world, is not going to come from policies, from edicts, from rules and regulations. Varnashram in our movement in the world is going to be invoked by deep, loving exchanges. Right? How does this make sense? By deep, loving exchanges which are based on wisdom. And I do stress this, not sentimental rubbish, where people are doing the wrong thing, no one wants to say anything, the person becomes spoiled, makes offenses, and then you're surprised when they leave Krishna consciousness because Krishna has kicked them out because their devotional creeper is dead. Right? So we're not talking about sentiment. But our conviction is when there is a deep, mature, and wise loving exchange with the devotees, where we see them for who they are. That means see their actual quality, see them in their entirety, love them anyway, and are consistent with that love. When we are consistent with the loving expression towards the devotees, what will happen? The devotees will feel secure. You understand? The love breeds a type of security, confidence, not sentiment, a real confidence, a real strength of character that the devotees in our movement can say, yes, I'm a Vaishnava. Yes, I am a spirit soul. And in this particular lifetime, my conditioned nature is a Shudra and no one has anything to say about it. You understand? They feel secure enough to say, this is my condition. They're secure enough to be honest. And because they've received that unconditional love, you're valuable. It doesn't matter your varna, because your varna is just your conditioned nature. It doesn't matter, right? So when people feel secure, they can be honest. And when they can be honest, then you can actually help them. Does that make sense? Yeah? We know there's these kind of arguments about, you know, the different types of preaching that go on in our movement, right? We're meant to give it to people straight, etc., etc. But there's something that we're losing in the equation, right? You want to take people to Krishna consciousness. It's wonderful. You've got your, you have your devotional kind of like, you know, your core devotional, you know, character. You know, I'm going to Krishna. I'm getting there 100 miles an hour. You know, you've got your devotee whose devotion is like a, you know, Lamborghini contact, right? Your devotees who's kind of traveling to Krishna in their Porsche 911, right? They feel I'm getting to Krishna fast, right? I'm getting there fast. I'm getting there in style, baby, right? Like that. and they want to, you know, everyone else should come with them to Krishna and get there in style, get there fast. That's fantastic. But there's one thing about your devotion. You want to take people somewhere. You have to pick them up first. So we have our prayojana. We have our goal. Yes, we want to go to Krishna. And we want other people to go to Krishna, right? You may be traveling to Krishna at 100 miles an hour. It's wonderful, right? But you left the other people who you wanted to bring to Krishna, you left them at the bus stop. You have to pick them up to take them somewhere. So it's not that we lose the purity of the goal, but we also have to speak it in a way that the people we're trying to pick up can understand. Does that make sense? Right? Now, you can say all you like that we have to give it straight, and that's wonderful, we do. But we also have to give it in a way that people can accept it. So get them on the bus before you drive. Yeah? That's the whole point. At least get them on the vehicle so you can take them somewhere. That's our point. Yeah? How you do that, that's down to you. That's down to Guru Sadhu Shastra. But pick them up first. So the love that you give pursues you. These loving exchanges are extremely powerful. We want to be empowered, but it's going to come because you're strong. Okay? This idea of resilience. We talk about tolerance, humility. We should consider that it's our job to get other people to that platform. Be under no illusion. Normally, Vaishnavas work out of the mode of goodness. You understand? Normally. But in this day and age, you will not find people in the mode of goodness. Generally, they're in passion or ignorance. So be under no illusion. You cannot expect people to be qualified. You have to give the qualification. And the love that you give will pursue you. It will make you strong. Very strong, actually. And it will mean that you will be able to deal with the challenges that come in your spiritual life. People won't even know because you're able to digest the challenges. You see? Now, I don't know about you. I've seen some devotees who can really knock back the prasadam, right? Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, you've seen some devotees, it's like their plate is enough to feed a small village, you know, in India. You understand? It's a serious prasadam plate, right? There's one devotee who used to say in Soho Street, he could knock back the prasadam, right? And I always used to wonder, how does he do it? Is it that there's some kind of secret Tupperware containers, you know, he's just, you know, feeding some away, you know, I don't know, how? But I realized he just has a very strong fire of digestion, right? He just has a very strong fire of digestion. So it's not how much is on your plate, it's how much you can actually digest. Huh? We don't know what's going to come to us. You can't control what's going to come to you in your life. But you can always, by building your own strength, by building the strength of others, you can put yourself in such a powerful position in spiritual life that practically whatever comes to you, you can handle it. This is amazing. Right? It's not that something came, Krishna, why did you do this to me? I'm such a sincere devotee, I'm trying so hard. Krishna's like, there's going to be tests in this material world. But like I told you, we gave you all this time to strengthen yourself. Right? I gave you this time to strengthen yourself. We gave you the teachings, the Shastra, so you could make yourself so strong that practically some of the tests that come to you, you didn't even notice it was a test. Because you were so strong, you just walked past it. You just passed it like that. That's what happens in Krishna consciousness. Between the tests, you have an opportunity to increase your adhikar. Increase your qualification. You know, this is what's going on. And just like you see in these loving exchanges, this is what we're meant to replicate in this movement. But you can only do it with endurance if you know what's going on. Right? We were giving a seminar in Kilanagri and we were explaining that the key principle for seniors is they need to feel respected. Right? Sometimes devotees are like, no, why should I respect the seniors? I've seen them, they do this wrong, they do that. You keep that attitude up, that's fine. You wait, Krishna will just put you in a senior position and then you'll find you'll receive the same treatment from your juniors. Right? the reason why you're meant to respect your seniors is because they're, the reason why you're meant to tolerate your seniors is because they're always tolerating you. Right? I'm being very honest, right? It's like this, right? And you may have had experience. So someone new comes to the temple, right? They've got a bit of an attitude about them, right? They come to the temple, maybe to a lunchtime class. And you can see, you can actually tell what they're thinking, because you've run in to give the class and you were slightly late, right? The class was supposed to start at 1. You got in about 5 past. They're looking at you like, you know, huh, yeah, you Hare Krishna spiritual people. Yeah. You're late, you know? You're supposed to be spiritual, you know? You're late, huh? Like, you know, and there's a bit of an attitude like, you know, come on then. What's going on here? Prabhu. You know, like that kind of thing. Now, what they don't understand is, right, that guy is sitting with all the women, right? He doesn't even know, because it's his first time, he doesn't know that actually you're sitting in the wrong place. His legs are sticking out at the deities, right? He's got no clue that he's actually pointing to the deities. He's doing so many things wrong, but he's got no knowledge. So the only thing he sees is that you were 5 minutes late. And it doesn't even occur to him that you can see about 10 things that he's doing wrong. Right? He thinks he's being very magnanimous by subtly pointing out like that, yeah? He's thinking, I'm being very generous. I don't want to disturb the spiritual atmosphere, right? But what he doesn't understand is if you wanted to, you could point out at least 10 things he's doing wrong. Now, imagine what happens when an advanced devotee comes into the environment, right? Or even devotees who are senior and they really know the etiquette, right? They really know the etiquette. I remember one time we went to visit one Prabhupada disciple, one sannyasi, and I'd come from the temple in Soho Street, and I thought, I'll be very magnanimous, you know, Maharaj is so wonderful, I'll be very magnanimous. And so I had a garland on, right? And I said to Maharaj, I said, Maharaj, can I give you my garland? I said to him, yeah. And I said, is it okay if I give you my garland, Maharaj? Like that kind of thing. And he just went like this, and I took the garland that was around my neck, and I put it around his neck. Right? He didn't say anything. He's just very humble. Of course, when he left the room, all his disciples turned on me like, you can't give that to Maharaj. He's seen you too. What do you think you're doing? You know? I was like, okay, I didn't know. Right? I had no clue that you don't do that. You don't do that, you know? I remember another time, you know, one sannyasi was giving class in the temple, and so he chanted the verse, and then, you know, the devotees can say the verse, right? And the etiquette is, the devotees who are senior in the room, they are you wait till they chant first. If they choose not to, then the juniors chant. That's the etiquette. The Swami chanting the verse, you know, I was there, kind of like new, you know, excited, you know, in my tracksuit bottoms, you know, like that, you know. And so the moment he chants the verse, and I kind of just start chanting. And I caught it. When I started doing that, the sannyasi looked at the temple president like, what are you teaching these guys? Seriously, he looked at him like, what's going on here, you know? Because of course we didn't know. So the reason why you respect your seniors is they'll know the etiquette better than you do. If you ever decide to make a big issue of their mistakes, if they choose to, they can immediately point out 100 things that you're doing wrong. Right? It's just that they're tolerant. They know you're doing it wrong. They actually know you're making mistakes, and they're saying absolutely nothing. Right? But if they want to, they can point out all of your mistakes, I guarantee you. And that's talking about senior devotees just in terms of etiquette. Now, if they're advanced Vaishnavas, they can see your consciousness. Right? If they're advanced Vaishnavas, if they want to, either they can see your consciousness or Krishna can just tell them. You know that devotee? She wakes up at 12 noon. Right? She's never up for Mangalati. Right? You know? Morning program, forget it. You know? Krishna can just tell them. They can come into the environment and Krishna just tell them, that disciple of yours, right? She's not been doing any service at all for the past 2 months. And she thinks she's very advanced. Right? So there's a reason behind it. You see? It's not enough to just know what to do. If you know the reasons why, then it puts your activity above the platform of the mind. The mind is always unsteady. So if you do things from the platform of the mind, sometimes you'll do it, sometimes you won't do it. because it's all about how you feel. Yeah, I feel like doing it today, tomorrow I don't feel like doing it. But if it comes from the platform of the intelligence, that means with knowledge, then you'll know why you're meant to do it, right? Similar thing, with the seniors, you're always meant to be affectionate towards the junior devotees, always, right? Because by the affection, they become secure and confident. They're not going to be like that all independently. So be under no illusion that I just tell them what to do. No, if they're junior, you must be affectionate and kind to them. And Prabhupada says that, by the way. Just in case anyone has some ideas that this is kind of new agey or something, you'll find this. You research this. This is exactly what the founder Acharya says. It's exactly what the founder Acharya says. They have no expectation that they should be anything independently. If you're senior to them, you should consider that it's your duty to empower them and uplift them. Do not expect anything of your juniors. That is the proper etiquette. You should expect absolutely nothing of those who are junior to you. Absolutely nothing. And I mean that without any exception. Although you may not tell them that all the time, because they kind of can behave badly sometimes, you know that, right? But don't expect anything of them. Expect nothing of them. So there are these spiritual sciences, and it's there. If you know this, you know how to behave. Literally, you can write down on one side of A4 the entire dynamics of devotee association. You follow it, you will never have a problem in your spiritual relationships for the rest of this lifetime. It sounds like a very high claim, but it's a fact. I'm telling you, it's a fact. You follow this, you will always know what to do in any situation without any exception. Because Krishna's science is so brilliant. Think about this carefully. You look into the outside world, there's incredible variety, right? But if you understand from Shastra, where is that variety coming from? Where is all the material variety coming from? It's just three modes. Right? It's just transformations of combinations of goodness, passion, ignorance. You look on a great painting or anything in the outside world, there are millions of shades of color. But by knowledge, you know it's just red, blue, and yellow, right? They're just combinations of three primary colors. You look in even in this room, all of these different bodies. But according to Ayurveda, it's just pitta, kapha, vata, dosha. Just three doshas. So Krishna's system is simultaneously simple, yet incredibly sophisticated. You understand? He takes just a few basic building blocks and he just combines them in amazing and creative ways. So therefore, the Shastra is also like that. It's just a few basic things just used in different creative ways, and it works like a charm every single time. Right? So actually, to be honest with you, the material world is not this complex, bewildering place. You never know what's going to happen. I don't know how to deal. No, it's actually very, very simple. It's incredibly simple. There's just a few key principles. You learn this, you're gone. Right? You learn this, that's it. That's lesson learned, and you just spend the rest of your time chanting, engaging in pure devotional service. The rest of the world is not a mystery. Right? There's no mystery. This is how you deal. Huh? And therefore, we should end on this point. Here it's explained that he behaved almost like stone or wood, but he always used his energy in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Please be under no illusion. By the arrangement of our founder Acharya, life in this world is not meant to be this hellish experience of suffering. To be very, very honest with you, the reason why we're suffering is as devotees, we have absolutely no understanding of lifestyle. We have no understanding how to live in this world whatsoever. So what we're doing is we're continuing our materialistic conceptions of life. We're bringing that materialistic conception and we're thinking that because we chant Hare Krishna, everything should be fine. Right? And then you get shocked when it's not. Right? Because you're only chanting a couple of hours a day. The rest of the day, you're doing a whole range of other things, but you don't know how to do those other things in line with the teachings of the Shastra. That's why we're suffering. Imagine, Someone can learn very early on, by nature, you're a Brahmin. You will do well in a work where you're exchanging knowledge, where you're advising. But the person insists, they insist on doing something else, and they wonder why it's so much of a struggle. And then, as alluded to here, they actually practically have hardly any energy for chanting, right? Because their day-to-day life is so taxing on the mind. It's so taxing on the mind and on the body that practically they come home, they're just trying to recover from the day's experience. You understand the point? So the Shastra does this. It'll tell you one simple principle. You do that one thing, it immediately destroys a whole range of issues at the root. You understand? That's what it's meant to be. But it requires some application of knowledge. So you can have the choice, but if you choose not to, that is also your choice. We're not here to tell you what to do, but please don't blame Krishna and don't blame devotional service. We were doing a seminar once, and we will end on this point, how for many devotees, the chanting is a struggle. Because what's happened is, and I was discussing this with Sachinanda Maharaj, for many of us, because of how we've engaged in devotional service and our sadhana, your sadhana becomes a big... You start to associate negative feelings with your sadhana. If you're not careful, you will associate negative emotional experiences with your sadhana. There are some people who, when they were young in the movement, they were given the chanting as a punishment. Right? Can you imagine that? You've done something wrong. Okay, go in the corner and chant 16 rounds. Really? Really? And then people are surprised that that person, they cannot pick up a bead bag. They can't pick up a bead bag because for them, chanting means punishment and negativity. So whenever they get their beads in their hand, they're thinking, I don't want to chant. It's just, and they don't, and they may not, and that's it. And you're lucky if they're even conscious of it. Worse is if they're not conscious, they just don't know why they have an aversion to chanting. So don't let that happen to you. It is very, very important to always make sure that you associate as much as possible positive experiences with your devotional life, positive experiences with your devotional association, positive experiences with your sadhana. So try to be in positive environments. Chant in a good mood, right? Don't chant when you chant every day. But try and do it earlier in the day, not when you're exhausted from work and you really don't want to chant. But I've got to do it because Guru Maharaj said so. You know, like that. You know? Because what you're doing is you're making a negative, you're building a negative connotation with the chanting, with the holy names. The holy names is always positive. But you, your samskar, may not fully appreciate that. That's what the reading and the shastra does. It helps you to understand this holy name. It is the supreme personality of Godhead in sound vibration, right? You know, like you have these movies, right? So when the movie comes out, you get the soundtrack, right? You know what I'm talking about? You get the soundtrack to the film, and it's like an advert for the film, right? You know it's true. Everything I do it for you. Bit cheesy, but you get the point, right? So it's meant to be like that. So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, it is the soundtrack of spiritual existence. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the soundtrack of spiritual existence. Everything is in there. So we're meant to understand that when we're chanting, it is ultimately going to bring us back to this loving devotional association. So please protect your japa. Protect your sadhana with knowledge. Do it properly. Above all, do it. Even if it's going to be in the negative sense, get it done. So first, make sure it's done. Right? That's the starting point. You know, at least get in the ballpark area. But if you can, as much as possible, always build positive experiences in with your sadhana. Do it nicely, in good association, in knowledge. Understanding that this is purifying me. You know, you can do prayers to glorify the holy name beforehand. When you finish your sadhana, you can pray to your spiritual master, to Prabhupada, thank you for allowing me to chant. Thank you for helping me to build my relationship with you. Please help me to love you more. You can ask the Holy Name, please allow me to love you. Please allow me to feel affection for you. Right? Whatever, as they say, floats your boat. Okay? But it's down to you. We want to see, and Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, expects to see an army of empowered individuals. He expects to see an army of empowered individuals who will share Krishna consciousness with the entire world, and they will do it in style. Huh? With great creativity, great love, abundance and affection. The love that you give pursues you. The love that you give others, not the sentiment, not the harshness, but the actual love. The trouble with us is that our love is not strong. Right? That's our trouble. Our trouble is our love is not strong. It's weak. We're not like Krishna at all. Therefore, either it goes to extreme sentiment, we close our eyes, I can't see anything that the person needs to work on, because if I even recognize one thing that's wrong with them, I'll reject them. So I become sentimental because my love is not strong. Right? Or it goes the other side, anything they do wrong, we reject them. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna sees you and he can see you, he can see all of your faults, all of your good qualities, and he loves you anyway. That's strong love. Do you understand? That's real love. Because then he can actually love you carefully by looking at you, seeing you warts and all, loving you anyway, and helping you to improve. Okay? So that's real love. That's proper unconditional love. Not the mode of ignorance where you close your eyes and then when the person makes more and more mistakes, then it wasn't my fault. But you could have helped that person. Huh? You could have helped that person, but you're selfish. So you're more concerned about just having an easy spiritual life than you are about actually caring for other people. You're selfish. And that's our problem. Either selfish, sentimental, or harsh, selfish. So there is a science. The unconditional support has to be there. Only to the extent that you build up that security should you then try and help to improve, unless it's an emergency where you have to do something. Okay? But generally it's done in this way. So there are dynamics. Yeah? And if we empower each other, then spiritual life is amazing. Let's be honest. Spiritual life is absolutely like mind-blowing. It's amazing. Huh? And there's so many wonderful experiences and things that Krishna's going to do. He loves you unconditionally. You're dealing with a person who can actually see you and they love you unconditionally. That's amazing. Right? Now, what are we going to do to care for one another, to love one another in such a way that the love is strong and we will actually help each other to move forward? Yeah? Please always remember that the love you give others pursues you. If you want to be, if you're serious about being empowered, and we will need empowerment to spread this movement, be under no illusion. If you're serious about being empowered, about having amazing, thrilling spiritual experiences, then we're talking about the love agenda. Right? The love that you give other individuals, other devotees, pursues you. Okay. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janita Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. I'm sorry I've gone over time, so I don't know if we should just stop there or questions. Is it okay? Okay. Any questions or comments?